Chapter 11. Red Haven. Saskeen Haast walked into the great stores of the palace of the Fabricator General. Servitors clomped about, mindlessly performing whatever it was they were programmed to do. Whenever she saw an adept, she ducked out of sight until they had passed. They were no one of any consequence, but such low-ranking people tended to be insufferable busybodies, taking such pride in their inconsequential work that they would report the slightest thing out of place. They bemused Haast. She could understand it if they behaved so for favour, but she had spent some time now among the servants and bondsmen of the palace, and most of them appear to lack any iota of ambition. They had been extremely hard to hide among, and she had come close to discovery. She checked her impatience. So close to being freed from the tedious role that had been forced upon her, she was in danger of making a mistake. The palace's store was immense and stocked with all manner of things. There were those tech priests who still ate, and so there was room after room of hyper-chilled larders. The machine as well as the flesh of such creatures needed sustenance, and so there were also kilometres of shelving taken up with chemical drums and vats of elixirs, spare parts and raw materials. These items for the maintenance of Kubik's extensive household did not interest her. She needed the deeper stores. Kubik's personal laboratory was incorporated into the palace, and it was served by its own complex of receptaculi. Beyond them were the cavernous cellae, where creatures from all over the Martian Empire were kept. Rare technologies, organisms, and resources. But what she needed was closer to hand. She followed stairs down into the chemical stores of the palace, passing huge tanks full of liquids and silos of powder. She checked the location of the object on her data slate and slowed. She was getting close. She halted at a long row of identical cylinders, taller than two men and held in frames of yellow metal embellished with the castings of the Machina Opus. She searched out the data stamps at the top of each one, the laser reader on her slate bipping as it scanned the patterns of binaric lines and dots. They were full of pressurized methylon, all but one. 00110001111110, she said, and double-checked the number sent to her by Mariazette Isolde. This was it. The cylinder was sealed and must be cut open. If the information was wrong, she'd be doused in supercooled liquid and suffer an agonizing death. She did not hesitate and produced a las cutter from inside her stolen robes. It was then, las cutter in hand, that she was interrupted.
O1-Divore, what by the Omnisire are you doing down here?
Saskeen Haast tensed at the high, piping voice of Vorid Choom, Kubik steward.
This is not your designated place of service. Please submit immediate summary report as to your last movements. Today and yesterday will suffice.
I regret I cannot, Master,
Haast said humbly, secreting the las cutter in her sleeve.
Your binaric projector is still non-functional?
Yes, my master.
Choom glided down the aisle, his long serpentine fingers entwining with one another and disengaging repetitively.
Really? It is 2 months. This is most irregular. I will look into it myself. Tell me then verbally why you are here.
I am awaiting a delivery of replacement parts for the Master Somnarium Steward, she said.
You will not find them here. You are very far from the correct store.
I am lost, Master, she said,
feigning embarrassment. Choom was not deceived. His green glass augmetic eyes whirred as they focused on her face.
You are lying, he said. This is modus unbecoming. You shall be reported and dealt with. You are in a high security area. This is an offence punishable by mind wipe. I am summoning the palace guard.
If you must.
Choom let out a shrill squeal as Haast cast off her cloak, revealing a supple, sin-skin-clad body underneath. She activated the las cutter and slashed it across Choom's throat. His squeal became a gurgle, and he fell down, spraying artificial blood and lubricant. An alarm sounded some way off.
Thrown, said Haast.
She turned to the cylinder and set to work. Tybalt the Abolitiate dwelt in darkness. He dreamed no dreams. For him there were periods of death with peaceful nothing in between. The time for peace was over. He came awake, activated by the last of his shouted trigger words. Warm liquid flushed around him, carrying methylon suspension fluid from his casket out of drains at the bottom. His body temperature rose quickly. He flexed his hand. The neurogauntlet's five claws ticked on glass. He reached for his thigh, where his executioner pistol was holstered, and drew it. His casket was at an angle. Light from its regulating machinery bathed his skull-masked face, supplementing the weak lumen glow admitted by a gash in a metal surface where a triangle of plastile had been peeled back. His casket was in a cylinder. He heard shouting, smelled blood, sensed the deadly prickle of radium ammunition. Under his death's head rictus, Tybalt grinned. Insanity was the logical end result of a life like Tybalt's. Frenetic violence followed by enforced suspension. A normal man would not have survived long, but Tybalt was far from normal. It was not that his brain had been altered, or his body packed with implanted technology. What suited him to his role was not what had been done to him, but what he was. When Tybalt was born, the sense of empathy human felt for fellow human was missing. Tybalt cared only for the suffering of others, not their tears or their stories. No smile could move him, only terror. Tybalt had been born to kill. It was a trait the Assassinorum was only too glad to exploit. Roaring like an animal, he drew back his gauntlet and thrust it forwards. The distance his fist travelled was minimal. The glass shattered anyway, destroyed by a combination of enhanced strength and carefully inculcated skill. Ripping and rending, he sliced the frame of his casket away, leaving its machines to die smoking. Shearing through the metal of the empty methylon cylinder, Tybalt climbed howling into the fray. His emergence brought a moment of silence. A clade of elite Skitarii gathered at each end of an aisle lined by cylinders. Haast was crammed in between two of the storage units. Bodies of cybernetic warriors that had strayed too close lay broken on either approach. The targeting unit on Tybalt's backpack rose up, its glassy eye taking in a 270-degree view of his surroundings and swiveling about to complete the picture. A miniature cogitator in the backpack calculated all attack vectors, ranking the opposing Martians in order of threat. Targeting reticules danced all over the faceplate screen of his skull helm. Combat stimulants pumped into his system in massive quantities, elevating his metabolism and mind to superhuman heights. The battle took a microsecond to observe, evaluate, and process. "Ever saw," said one of the Skitarii. Their rifles opened fire again. Tybalt ran. He was fast. The low gravity of Mars made him faster. An inhumanly high leap sent him crashing among the cyborgs. With his neurogauntlet flashing, Tybalt set about his deadly work. Alarms blared all over Kubik's palace. The sounds of battle grew nearer. Heavily armored myrmidons enclosed the Fabricator General in a phalanx of steel-caged flesh as they hurried him from his apartments to the main gate. But he was not safe. Lesser priests came running behind, shouting out status reports with emotionless efficiency. "There were a dozen assassins," one said. "There are only two," said another. More broadcast frequent updates to the situation on Terra. The other High Lords were dead, and now Vangarich was coming for him. An explosion rumbled beneath their feet. In its wake, masonry clattered. Dust blew on a chemical wind. Kubik screeched angry orders in swift binaric, sending his servants scurrying away. He had been assured the remaining assassins would be caught. They were not, and now they were in his palace. Those responsible for this failure would be rendered down to components if he survived.
"Prime of primes, we have an armored transport waiting at the main gate," said the Myrmidon Lord, Primus Ultragangovich.
They marched down the great staircase of the palace, the weapons mounts of the Myrmidons swiveling as they tracked potential ambush sites. By the open gates, Mechanicus troops of all kinds looked out, weapons ready.
"The Fabricator General comes," a seneschal shouted. "Hail the Omnissiah!"
More cybernetic Martians joined Kubik's group, shielding their high priest with their own flesh and metal. They swept towards the door. On the plaza outside, a clade of Onager dune crawlers squatted around a legged armored transport waiting to bear Kubik away.
"Get the Prime to the Walker," ordered Gangovich.
Heavily armed Skitarii poured out of the palace. Cataphron battle servitors rolled into position around the plaza. The walker's door dropped, and Kubik was hustled towards it. When he was 10 meters from the door, the walker exploded. Shrapnel scythed out, felling the lead elements of Kubik's bodyguard. Others crowded around him as a shot rang out, striking down a myrmidon who had placed herself in front of Kubik barely in time. Another shot cracked across the plaza, and another myrmidon died. Its head removed, its body mindlessly stamped away. Kubik's enhanced mind went into overdrive. The scene was a total loss. Skitari primes shouted orders. Weapons of the most potent sort blazed in every direction, but the shots kept coming, each a kill. The shooter moved constantly. Every time their position was located, they had gone, and another shot sounded. Kubik's bodyguard were being whittled away fast.
"My lord, this way," someone said.
Arms and mechanical appendages pulled at him, dragging him back into the palace. A shot hit an onager with an audible plink. A moment later, the construct exploded, slaughtering dozens of the omnisized faithful.
"We will take you to Port Fabricata," said Gangovich. "We must get you out of the palace."
"No,"
Kubik managed. They were in the hall again, away from the doors. Outside, the shrieking discharge of high-energy weapons carried on, unabated. Kubik extricated himself from the manipulators of his would-be saviors.
"I will go to the chamber of the Diagnostiad. I will be safe there. It is inviolable."
"As you wish, my lord,"
Gangovich said, and Kubik was again hustled away. Kubik arrived in an antechamber to the Diagnostiad by one-man bullet lift, whisked there through a depressurized transit tube. The palace was a long way away, and Kubik began to relax. Outside the Diagnostiad, troops of all Mars's many varieties mustered to protect the approach. Not only Kubik needed defense, but also the tech priest choir, who made up the core of the Martian world mind. A meter-thick wheel door separated the bullet lift from the Diagnostiad. Disengaging its complex security protocols calmed him. By the time the door rolled open again, he had begun to formulate a plan. He went into the great sphere, the door rumbling closed after him, and walked around the giant needle that housed the primary interface throne. The whispering voices of the hundreds of mind-linked tech priests hissed on the air. Quiet. Safety. With a sigh, Kubik stooped. The weight of Mars was on him, and he must know what occurred in the palace. He attempted to open a data link from his mind to the Martian noosphere. Nothing happened. Internal diagnostic checks indicated no malfunction in his augments. He went to a console embedded in the main gateway. He bent over it and inserted a probe into an access socket. Immediately, he uncovered the problem. There was but one conduit for the motive force and data flow in and out of the chamber. Impossibly, somebody had put a block on it. He retracted his mechadendrite from the console into his robe and made for the door. There was always a member of the Synod on duty there, watching over the machines.
"I wouldn't bother," said a voice behind him. "I got in here. Don't you think I would have taken the precaution of isolating you?" "He's dead. It is a fine, fine place to hide," the Diagnostiad. "Only a couple of ways in, only one way out, and only one data line. A good idea of yours to come here, if only I hadn't have been waiting."
"Drekan Vangorich," said Kubik.
He turned to find the Grand Master of the Assassinorum behind him.
"I am honoured. You came yourself."
"Well, you're an important man, Fabricator General."
Vangorich was wearing the robes of one of the muttering components of the Diagnostiad. Kubik searched for an empty alcove. Sure enough, he found one. In Vangorich's hand was a light needle pistol with an underslung plasma caster. It looked like something specifically devised to kill the Master of Mars.
"You knew I would do this," said Kubik, "that I would come here."
"Knew," said Vangorich. "I planned it. I am the Grand Master of Assassins, after all. One would hope such a person might be good at their job. But then, who can tell in these trying times? So few people seem to be fit for their office."
"You cannot kill me," said Kubik.
"Can't I? Your servants are distracted, and they're looking in the wrong place. We have plenty of time."
gloating before execution is the primary cause of failure of 7% of despots, said Kubik.
I'm not going to gloat, said Vangorich. We're going to talk. Actually, I'm going to talk and you're going to listen. But it's not gloating. You know, I was raised in Temple Venenum. We are a subtle temple, not like the others with their guns and alien technology and psychotic super warriors. Ours is more genteel. We follow the way of guile, of poison, though not exclusively so. Take Krul. I'm sure you have heard of him. He is of my temple. He prefers to use his fists, but I have always had an affection for poison. It is so discreet. Poison a man and he won't even know he's been murdered. You can change the course of a river with the careful removal of a stone. That is the assassin's task. With poison, nobody need ever know who moved it.
How apt, said Kubik. He was using his emotionless machine voice. You are poison, Vangorich, corrupting everything you touch.
Vangorich smiled, pleased with the comparison.
I never had you for a dealer in metaphor, Fabricator General. I do like to think I am subtle, like poison, but I am no corrupter. I prefer to think of myself as a healer. Many poisons are medicine. Only at too high a dose are they deadly.
Kubik bleeped in indignation.
The removal of the Grand Master from the High 12 was done for sound reasons. We were remiss to allow your reinstatement.
You were right to bring me back. It should have been done sooner.
So that you might install yourself as ruler?
So that I might prevent the deaths of billions of Imperial citizens, said Vangorich. I have not assassinated very many people myself for a long time, Kubik. I am going to make an exception for you. Of all the petty, self-serving, childish behaviour I have witnessed on the Senatorium Imperialis, yours has been the worst by far. I was willing to forget and forgive, move forward with the Senatorum, and rule correctly according to the will of the Emperor, however hopelessly idealistic his plans were. But then you had to disobey Thane and move Ulanor. That is what set me on this course of action. In a way, you are responsible for the deaths of the High Lords. Before you made your last greedy error, I was planning on just bullying you all to work together, but you made me realize I'd be better off without the lot of you. I don't know what I should have expected, I suppose. You did want to secede from the Imperium. I'm an optimist. That's my problem.
That which is not a part cannot secede.
Semantics. Without the Imperium, the Empire of Mars is dead, and vice versa. We are one people, and that will not change, no matter how many times you say otherwise. You are a High Lord of Terror, and you betrayed your office and your Emperor Omnissiah many times over.
You cannot kill me with impunity.
I can, said Vangorich. I'm going to give you a choice. Poison comes in many forms, and not all of it is deadly to living organisms. There are poisons for machines, too. When I sent Red Haven here, I had my infocyte Yendel secrete a dataphage in the Martian noosphere. Now, there are formidable defenses in your data vaults, but we of Venenum are clever. The phage has had time to mature, to learn its enemy. It's been there for months, gathering information to make itself as deadly as it possibly can be. The new sphere has become a home from home. Every lock and keyhole, window and door is known intimately to it.
Kubik's mechanical limbs twitched.
You will topple an empire to teach me a lesson? Vanity.
Of course not, snorted Vangorich. I'm outlining your options. The first is this. You do nothing. I shoot you in the head with this gun, which carries a neurotoxin so potent it will burn out every last organic nerve remaining in your body, and then I release the phage into the world core. It may result in the destruction of Mars as a functioning civilization, or it may just destroy billions of terabytes of very valuable information. Either way, it is a circumstance you will want to avoid.
And the other alternative?
You voluntarily shut down. After giving me your intelligence core, of course. The thing is, I don't want you around any more, Kubik, but I would rather that everyone else thinks you are still in charge. It'll be easier for all concerned,
that way.
You wish me to kill myself and acquiesce to a replacement who will take my identity?
That's it. You must ask yourself, what is more important to you, yourself as an individual, or the continued existence of thousands of years of knowledge?
Kubik made a strange sound, a flurry of beeps and twittering. It took Vangarich a moment to realize that the Fabricator General was laughing.
You cannot succeed in this. Give yourself up, Vangarich. I assume you have succeeded in disposing of our colleagues on the Council. Stop here. You have rooted out the rot. My death will accomplish nothing.
It will make me feel a lot better, said Vangarich. I do so hate a traitor.
He straightened his gun arm, levelling the pistol at Kubik, and held up a device in the other.
Give me your intelligence core, or I swear I will kill this world while you watch.
Vangarich stared at Kubik, his thumb ready over a button that could wipe away the accumulated wisdom of millennia.
You are bluffing.
I assure you I am not, said Vangarich, and you cannot afford to assume I am.
Kubik wilted.
You have me, he said finally. You slight my loyalty to the Imperium and ask me to prove my loyalty to Mars. Here it is, then, the last act of a true servant of the Omnissiah.
Kubik threw back his hood, revealing a head underneath made entirely of metal. He cast down his rod of office and depressed a panel on the side of his skull. A finger-width column rotated and withdrew from his head. He pressed out the centre of the column and held it out to Vangarich.
My intelligence core, the essence of who I am, is encoded herein.
Vangarich came forwards and took it. He passed it over a machine at his belt that beeped and shone green. Vangarich put the intelligence core in his pocket.
You are finally doing the right thing.
You will pay for this in time, said Kubik, his voice slurring.
Maybe I will, but you are paying for your sins first. Goodbye, Fabricator General, said Vangarich.
The indicator lights of Kubik's augments dimmed and went out. His limbs folded in on each other, and he slid gracefully to the floor. When he was down, Vangarich filled him with toxin needles.
A man's work is never done, said Vangarich.
He strode from the muttering diagnostiad into a small chamber lined with cogitator banks. A single immovable red glass eye stared out from their centre. Vangarich stood in front of it and leaned in.
Come on, Kubik. I knew about this last bolt hole. I can't have you exploding your consciousness once I've gone,
he tutted.
Don't you know non-organic intelligence is forbidden? This really is the end for you.
Whistling a jaunty tune, Vangarich got down on his hands and knees and yanked wires out of the cogitators until they stopped working. Then he took out a compact melter bomb and set it to go off where the connections had been thickest, just to be sure.